George Norrie back at you on Coast to Coast AM, and let's go back to the phones. Whose turn is it? It's Richard's in Pittsburgh, first-time caller. Hey, Rich.
Well, Mr. Norrie, good morning.
Morning to you.
I'd like to go off the board a little bit and talk about President Obama's recent proclamation that he's going to reveal the structure of the future of the space program in a couple of weeks. What I wanted to talk about is the Lagrangian points and why they really should be the next step. And to explain the Lagrangian points real quick for the uninitiated, it's in the two-body system between the Earth and the Moon, there are five gravitationally stable points, three of which are unstable. Now, if you draw a kite shape in your mind with the Moon at the top and the Earth at the bottom, since the Earth has the greater gravity pull, the two points on the outside of the kite are the L4 and L5 Lagrangian points, which are gravitationally stable in the Earth-Moon system. It means that anything that drifts into that point stays there and moves right along with the Earth, Moon, and Sun, and everything else as it moves through the cosmos. What's interesting about this is, firstly, the space dust may be there from the formation of the Earth-Moon system, which might explain why the Earth and the Moon are so different in composition.
Okay.
So that's one good point. The next point is that if we place something there, like a true space station for future space exploration, it doesn't require the fuel to move around. And the real reason that we need to go out there and take a look is that if there is an alien intelligence that wanted to leave something for us, that's the perfect place to put it.
You'd park it.
It's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, you park it right
on. It's a marker.
Fascinating. Now, the big question is, what do you think the space program will be like?
I honestly think that the space program is making a huge mistake in making Mars a target, because that, even when the planets are close together, which doesn't happen very often in their orbits, that's a three-year trip one way. Not to mention the time, if we wouldn't go 3 years one way to stay there for 3 days or so. We'd have to stay there for a lot of time.
Yeah, it's a long trip. I think those astronauts would go nuts after a while.
Not only that, but the physiological effects of such a long trip would be devastating. And they may not be able to come back home, which is exactly why we need to place something a little bit further out than the International Orbital Station, which it really is.
You know, I'm still baffled, though, why we gave up going to the moon after we stopped. I mean,
I think part of the reason is because What do we do with it? What we have there is regolith, which is this moon dust that doesn't. We have no earth sciences to say, here's what we can build with it.
What about helium 3?
We can't really place anything there.
What about grabbing helium 3 and using it? You know what?
That would be good, except the refinement techniques aren't there to do that.
No.
I think we're better off with taking something a little bit more. It's a more stable platform, it's more immediate, and it would serve as a space dock for launching future explorations. And if something happens to the spacecraft on the way back, even from the moon, they don't have to come back into Earth space. They can make a shorter trip to a permanent Lagrangian space dock to be repaired before they make the attempt to bring the valuable astronauts and their equipment back home.
All right, let's see what this space initiative is going to be. I hope it's exciting. We need another goal. I really believe that. Let's go to the creeped out line. Willie in Michigan, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Willie, how are you?
Hey, George, you're my hero. It's a pleasure and an honor to speak with you.
Well, thank you.
I have a story and a show suggestion for you. About 25 years ago, I was a teenager. I was riding bikes with a friend of mine, and he had to relieve himself, so, you know, there were some woods right there on the side of the road. He goes over to the woods and, you know, starts to do his thing, and he hears, like, you know, we both hear it. I'm standing out in the street. We hear, like, footsteps, like branches crunching and leaves.
Yeah.
And he goes, is that you? And he goes, whoa, is that you? And I go, no, that's not me. And we don't know what it was. It could have been, like, Sasquatch or a bear or what, but you know, he took off out of there. He couldn't even button up his pants. He got out of there.
I hope he learned the lesson there, huh?
So, I think so. I had a show suggestion because I've had these really vivid dreams lately, and I'm convinced. I told my wife I was going to call you, and I finally got through. But I'm convinced that I'm visiting a parallel universe. I mean, I have these vivid dreams, and it's like it's in the same city all the time.
What do they look like in the parallel universe? These cities, just like ours?
Kind of. I used to live outside of Boston. It looks a lot like Boston, but it's very I don't know how to say it, like flat, like it's not hilly, you know. It's like flat. It's like a flat land. I don't know how to describe it, but I know like the geography. I know where I live in this area. I live like on the west side of town, and I take like a train to get out there, like a shuttle kind of thing. And I live like I have to walk west of the train station and then turn north to get to where I live there, because I have these dreams like repetitively, like all the time.
You think many people this is happening to them too?
To other people that I know?
Yeah.
Nah, I've talked about it with a friend of mine. He said maybe he's had dreams like that in the past, but I've had like the same dream like over and over again. I mean, I know where I live in this little town. I know what I do. I ride the train, and it's bizarre. It's like, how do I have these same dreams over and over? And it's like a city, and I know the area like the back of my hand. You know, I can draw a map of it.
And you're living a totally different life there?
I wouldn't say it's totally different, but it is different. You know, but it's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's different from our world. It's it's kind of like a sterile environment, almost like not sterile, but just cleaner. You know, just overall.
Interesting.
Nicer.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting show. How many people are having visions of this too?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I like hear color and stuff and. I mean, and I'll come back, and I'll be singing this music in my head.
All right, we'll check into that. Of course, you know, we've done shows on parallel universes before, but the parallel worlds, that's different. Let's go next to Greg in California. You're up with us. Hey, Greg, go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you very much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to say to... hello, America. God bless you, and things will definitely get better. Just practice diversity and resourcefulness, and you'll find your feet. I've had a couple of experiences. I don't know. I've been kind of blessed, you might say, with kind of an open mind. My father was a hypnotherapist, healer, teacher who taught me quite a bit as I was younger, and I've had a number of paranormal experiences over my life. One of them was related to UFOs, and another one was related to spirits. So I could share a story with you tonight, whichever one you prefer.
Give me the spirit one.
The spirit one, okay.
I'm in a spirit mood.
Okay. All right. I lived in a small town in Marin County, California, and it was like a sort of a newly constructed building that was sort of designed after a Victorian building. And I had an upstairs and a downstairs, and I was there on my own one afternoon. And I had the television on, and I was doing something at my computer. And all of a sudden, the television turned off. And I looked around and, you know, checked the remote. And I thought, well, maybe the cat stepped on the remote or something, but that didn't happen. So I turned it back on. And then a few seconds later, the TV went off again.
Huh.
So I got this chill up my spine, and suddenly I'm thinking, okay, I feel something, that I'm not alone. So I turned the television on a third time, and I said, okay, I believe that I'm not alone here in this room, and I'm going to count to five. And when I count to five, I want you to turn the TV off again, and I promise I won't freak out. So I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and bam, the TV turns off again.
Did you freak out?
I freaked out kind of to myself.
You lied to it.
I lied to it. And then my girlfriend came home, and I said, hey, I got a trick for you. And I said, we're not alone living here. And I said, okay, you know, my partner's here, and I want you to let her know that you're in the present with us. And so I counted to five again, and once again, the television turned off, and she freaked out.
That is weird. Now, did you ever try the reverse and have it turn it back on?
No, I didn't do that. But what happened was, as this sort of progressed over time, one afternoon I was walking around the living room, and I felt this burning sensation on my arm, so I looked over, and I noticed the letter P was scratched into my arm, like someone took a needle and clawed the letter P into my arm.
That's strange.
And then I didn't think anything of it. I thought, Jesus, I must have, I don't know, brushed up against something. I don't. And then a few days later, I felt the burning sensation on my other arm, and I looked over, and again, the letter P was scrawled into my arm. So what I did is I ran to the computer, and I Googled mysterious scratches on my body, and every single one of them came up with hauntings.
Yeah. And how about the P's, though? Did you ever find out what that meant?
Yeah. So then I decided to bust out the Ouija board.
Oh, no.
We were like playing around, like, okay, what?
You did everything wrong.
Yes. This person spelled out the name Paula or Paulette. And
that's interesting.
It just started to progress and progress. So then I'm in my bed at night, and all of a sudden, this is a really bizarre one. I felt this energy, this being, like, lie on top of me. I'm alone in my bed, and I felt this, like, humming sound, like this electrical current suddenly come over my entire body, and this sort of, like, wave-like motion was sort of pressing down on my body, and I didn't freak out. I just lied there and experienced it. I thought, this is a really bizarre phenomenon. This is unbelievable. So, and then I shook it off. And this thing would come to me night after night. It actually, a female voice whispered her name in my ear. Whispered my name in my ear. And it just bizarre things were happening, like cold spots in the room, sounds of this presence, you know, upon me. And it became kind of annoying after, I mean, it was just like constantly sort of there. And I consulted some psychics and some people, and basically I made peace with it. Actually,
So you never cleansed the place?
I never cleansed the place. I tried. I staged, I tried to send it into the light. I spoke to people that are familiar with Wicca and all kinds of things, but this is a real interesting thing. My partner was out on the back deck one afternoon trying to get something off a tree, and she slipped and she fell down and hit her head really hard and got a concussion.
Oh my God.
She went to the hospital, checked out okay, and then the next day she was entering the kitchen at night, and she saw the woman coming down the stairs dressed in a Victorian dress with long black hair, thin, with, you know, clothing of that era.
And her name, of course, was probably Paula. Let's take a few more calls. Greg, thanks for that story. Next up, we go to Pennsylvania. George is up with us. Hey, George, how are you?
George?
Yeah, take it away, George.
Hey, I wanted to thank you. About a month and a half ago or so, you had a guest on talking about the dangers of aspartame.
Yes, Betty Martini.
Yes. I heard that show, and say a little bit of history. I was diagnosed with diabetes about 10 years ago.
Oh, my.
And I had really bad neuropathy. I've got, like, numbness from, like, tips of my toes to, like, halfway up my shin. And I heard the show. When I was diagnosed, I eliminated all sugars. I was using artificial sweeteners.
Good for you. And even be careful of some of those sweeteners, too. Make sure you're using some stuff that's very natural. And stay away from sugar.
Well, that's just it. The things I was looking after I heard the show, and just about everything I was using had aspartame in it.
Yeah.
And I eliminated that when I heard that show, and about 2 weeks ago, I woke up with this weird sensation. And it's like for the first time in, I can't remember how long, I actually felt warmth at, like, the tips of my toes.
Which is a good thing.
Yes, it's a very good thing. For the longest time, it was nothing but like an ice-cold feeling.
Isn't that amazing? And you know, take it even a step further if you want, George. I mean, start, you know, stay off carbohydrates because they have a lot of sugar in it, breads, pastas and stuff. Get rid of all that out of your diet for a while. You're going to see a difference.
I just thought it was amazing. It's like how quick it changed once I eliminated artificial sweeteners with the aspartame in it.
Yep, absolutely. Google Gabriel Cousins, Cousens, I believe. That's how he spells his name. But you'll find it. And he's got some great information about diabetics and how to drop that glucose level down.
Right.
Do it. I mean, that one of the things we do this alternative medicine stuff to help you. And it's good to hear from you. I'm glad that that worked for you. Let's go to Langland in Las Vegas, west of the Rockies. Hey there, Lang.
Hi there, George. How are you doing?
Okay.
Well, I'm driving here with my friend Shane. I'm originally from Seattle. And well, the whole point of my question is basically regarding the weather around the northwest and the west coast going down all the way to Nevada, where we currently are.
That's great. It snowed out there yesterday, didn't it, in Vegas?
And I actually just went through some snow on the Memorial Way Highway.
Crazy.
Yeah, and it's oddly warm in Seattle as well. And I was just wondering what your kind of take on this weather is, if it's maybe some sort of sign to the so-called things going on in this world that, you know, possibly might lead to it.
Well, I think, Lang, that this planet is going through a change. There's no doubt about it. It's a cycle. It's happened before. It's going to happen again, and it's happening to us right now. And that's why it seems so violent and so current. I mean, when I left St. Louis, it was 5 degrees. I can't remember a winter when it was 5 degrees. It's been years. So that's getting colder. The Midwest is getting colder. L.A. is getting colder. I believe what Robert Felix has said and what the head of a U.N. climate division has said, that we could be in the beginning stages of a mini ice age. That doesn't mean the summers will be freezing, but that they'll be shorter and the winters get longer. And, you know, we've had 5 days of rain in Los Angeles. I've been out here on and off 7 years. I can't remember a time when we've had that much rain in this kind of a period. I mean, absolutely incredible. Something's changing on this planet, and it's dramatic. Now, some people think it's because of HAARP, you know, up there in Alaska. We've done something to the atmosphere and the ionosphere. I don't know. I think it's just the planet. Hey, in a moment, the medium James von Prague joins us to talk about some spirit things on Coast to Coast AM. And yes, if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. James von Prague, not only is he a consultant on ghost whispers, but he is one heck of a medium, a challenger. He is able to challenge the mind to get into various aspects of spirit world, and he's one of the best. I had a great opportunity to talk with him, and we're going to do that on a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And also get ready for one heck of a ride this weekend with Ian Punnett and George Knapp. We'll be right back. James, welcome back.
Thank you, George. Nice to talk to you and to your listeners. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure. And you never stop, my friend. My gosh.
Gotta change the world.
everywhere. How's Ghost Whisper? Yep. Ghost Whisper still rolling along?
Yes, we're going to be starting our 5th season in August.
That's great.
We just finished our 4th, and it's in 400 markets around the world.
What is the fascination with the other side, James?
Well, I think everybody, every human shares two common experiences. One is birth, and we've been through that, and we know a little bit about that. And the other is death, and every single human being is curious as to what happens after you leave the physical body. So I think that is the fascination, the curiosity. One wants to know the answers to that.
And in some cases, an obsession. I know I'm getting, the older I get, James, the more obsessed I get with trying to figure out what's on the other side.
Yeah, I've been obsessed with death since I was born, which is so true. A lot of people, and it's funny that I'm doing this type of work, but a lot of people have that obsession about cemeteries, death, anything to do with death. A lot of Scorpio people, and Scorpio rules mediumship. I don't know, some people just are that way. I don't know what it is. It's just, it's interesting. I find it interesting.
Tell me about your new work.
My new book is called Unfinished Business, What the Dead Can Teach Us About Life. It's my 8th book, and it took me 25 years to write this book. Because what I did was I saved up many of the messages that I have received from spirit through the past 25 years for a book which my guides once told me, we want you to write a book about the other side from our point of view to the people on the earth to help them live a healthy life a manual, if you will, for living life. So I kept all of these messages, the varied messages for all these years. After my sessions, I'd go in the back and I'd write down, because I wouldn't remember them. So I'd write everything down, and I kept a box full of these messages. And this book is made up of all these incredible messages that Spirit has shared with me about regret, about guilt, about love, about fear, from their point of view, the Spirit's point of view. From when they passed over to the Spirit world, what it's like to look back at their lives, that they lived on the earth, and regrets, the should-haves, would-haves, and could-haves. And this book is really about how to help the living not to have should-have, would-haves, and could-haves. So when they pass over, a kind of a clean conscience.
Do these messages come easy for you now?
There comes a point where you develop the mediumship after 25 years. It's not easy, but you certainly know, you can decipher easier, I guess, would you say, more of the energy. And you can tell what is stagnant energy, what is easier, the more emotional the spirit is, the more emotional the receiver is, the stronger the message. You can tell when someone is completely blocking, skeptical, they'll not believe it, not open, fearful. I can read that. As I progress in my own development, I'm beginning to see more energetically the body, the human body, the person I'm reading, them on an energetic level. So I can see what the blockages are in their body as far as emotional blockages, physical ailments. So I'm also starting to, you know, I'm evolving also with my abilities.
You've almost become the new Edgar Casey.
It's interesting, but I just came back from Atlantic City, and I did a reading there, 1,400 people in the audience, and one lady received a reading and her message, and she said, you know, James, back in 1998, in the New Yorker Hotel in New York, you told me that one of your guides was saying that my stomach had problems, and the white liquid I was drinking was not helping. And she validated that she was drinking Maalox, and she had kidney problems. And she said no one could find it, but when I told her what it was, it's exactly what it was after she told the doctor, and they found exactly what it was kidney problems.
James, you say that there is no death. I want you to explain that.
Sure. I believe, from my experiences, that we are energy. I think Einstein proved that as well, that we are energy, molecules that are moving at a certain rate of speed in this dimension. I think we believe in a multidimensional vast universe. And I think that this three-dimensional world we live in, I think that we are energetic beings and we have physical bodies. I think that the spirit is of a higher energy, if you will. And I think at the time when the physical body dies, that the spirit, the energy, the spirit is released and goes to that other dimension, if you will. So I think you can't kill energy. I think energy changes form, if you will.
Merely a transition, just a stepping stone?
Merely a transition, much easier than people make it. I think it's incredible how obsessed people do get about death and fear it so much, when really there is no such thing as death. It's just stepping out of the body. I had a near-death experience three years back, and it was one of the easiest things I've ever experienced. And maybe I had that so I could teach people about it, but I'm telling you, it was very natural. And Spirit has come back many, many times, thousands and thousands of times, and said, listen, it's a very natural occurrence. We've done it many, many, many times in previous lives. It's nothing to fear.
James, when we dream, it seems very real when we're in the dream. Then we wake up, and in some cases we realize, oh, my gosh, that was only a dream. And you realize it was almost like a theater, a show, a play. Is death, in some respect, like that? Are we in a dream state or just as endless?
I think you could say, George, that it's a different level of consciousness. So a different state of consciousness, if you will. And I think that when you leave the physical vibration, the physical dimension, when you enter that dimension of the spirit, there's an opening of perception. And it's a different level of consciousness. It's more of an awareness, if you will. And it seems to be more of a wholeness of perception. The experience they have described as being, and myself also, the near-death experience, it's the same thing, that there's a sense of oneness, that you are completely aware that you are all one. There's a connection. I describe it very much like we are a thread. And when you pass into that dimension, you see that you're a thread to the universal tapestry. And you're part of that tapestry. You're a vital part of that tapestry. There's that sense that you are not separated. The biggest illusion that we have in this three-dimensional world is that we are separate from one another. When you pass into the other dimension, you realize you are one with everyone.
I'm in St. Louis for a couple of weeks, James, before I head off to Detroit. And I was looking at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today, which is our only newspaper. And for some reason, I open it up to the obituary column. And I'm looking at all these people who have passed on just in this city in their little pictures. Some of them are 25 years old. Some of them are 85 years old. And it's just endless. And I'm just looking at this, and I'm just... I don't know. I think I'm just I'm in a trance state looking at all these people who all had lives. They all had families, that some of them had loved ones. Maybe some of them did not. And then I'm trying to just picture what it's like for them on the other side now.
Well, you have to remember that, number one, if we can take it from a soul perspective, that, and it's difficult. You know, we're looking at it, the obituaries, reading the things, we get emotionally involved. But if we look at it from a soul perspective, that this is our schoolroom, that this earth is our schoolroom full of many lessons to learn, and that some souls come back for 25 years worth of class, and some come back for 80 years. Some just have to go through the birth experience in order to fulfill their agreement, if you will. So it's all different from a soul's experience. A soul can never die. It's just the experiences they need in the physical body, in the physical dimension. And then they get to go back home. These are classes that we take in order to evolve spiritually. It's not easy to, but I mean, if you take it on a different perspective, you can understand it a little bit.
Why does it seem that the dearly departed, the loved ones in one's family, seem to come back to us, at least for a little bit?
Well, it's exactly why I wrote this book, and I wrote the book for this reason, that Spirit wanted me to write this exact book, Unfinished Business, because of that. Many, many spirits, number one, want their loved ones to know that they're all right, that they're not dead. You know, every spirit goes to their funerals. Everyone visits the memorial services. They want their loved ones to know they're fine. They're not dead. They're not in that box. They're not burned up. They're very much alive, even more so than they were in the physical body. They're much, much more alive. It seems also that, and the reason I wrote this book, was because every single spirit that I've dealt with, at least 99% of them, have regrets, have guilt, have those should-haves, would-haves, and could-haves, and they want to come back and let their loved ones know they're sorry, to please forgive them. And they want to know, I wish I could have loved you more. If only I knew then what I know now, things would have been, my life would have been a lot different. And that's why I wrote this book, for that very, very reason, because of all those regrets the spirits have.
James, do these spirits somehow stand next to people, humans, people who are alive? So, is it almost like they're screaming with their mouths open and they're trying to get us to hear them?
A very good movie was the movie Ghost, which depicted it extremely well, with Patrick Swayze and Whoopi Goldberg, because that's really what it's like when I see it. It's a spirit right next to the individual, screaming at them. But really, when this person first passes into spirit, they need to learn how to communicate. And the way they communicate, they find, is if they use the emotion, their emotion, and project a thought with the emotion to their living relative, it's the best way to get through to them. You have to remember, the relative is crying, they're upset, they're angry, their grief and grief-stricken. So the spirit has, newly arrived spirit, must get through all of those walls in order to let their loved one know they're okay. Not easy to do.
This guilt, is it also on the part of not only the living, but the dead?
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. There are many stories, many messages in the book that talk about guilt, and that the guilt you carry with you into spirit. And it stays with you a little bit also within your mindset, this guilt. I wish I did that more. I could have done that. I could have prevented all of that hardship for my loved one if only I had done this. Much of it is guilt that they carry over.
I mean, people beat themselves up over this sometimes, James.
Very true. Very true. In life, in the physical world, they beat themselves up. Imagine when you're in a dimension where there is no time, where it's made up of just mental thought, and they have to relive in a way in their mind all the things they did and they didn't do on the earth. A lot of guilt, imagine. I'd have to relive that over and over again in their mind.
Is it haunting for them?
Very, very much so. Just like I talk about in the book about addictions, people who have addictions. I say to people, the brain is part of the physical body, the mind is part of the spirit. And in the mind, there is addictions, there's sensing, there's guilt, there's regret. All these things, these games we play with ourselves mentally, that crosses over with us. We are exactly what we think when we pass into those dimensions, exactly what we think. So if we carry with us mental anguish, guilt, regret, addictions. It stays with us until we can forgive ourselves, until we can realize that we're really just learning. We're just learning beings.
Do they sometimes regret the fact that, let's say they died in a car accident and they just did something stupid in the car and they got killed. Do they sometimes regret that and kick themselves over that?
Oh, sure. I've had a lot of that happen. I've had a lot of teenagers, actually. I've had a lot of people. I've had a lot of suicides, too, where they've regretted it, where they didn't think, you know, they thought they were going to be out of their pain. If they completed suicide, they'd be out of their pain and be finished. And not only to realize that not only are they still around their pain, but now they have to deal with the grief the parents left behind, the family members left behind. They got to feel all that information and deal with that. And they don't get out easy. Kids have been driving in a car accident or driving drunk or whatever it was. Kids with overdoses. I've had a lot of drug overdose cases. And they had a lot of regret about that. Now, some cases you could say, well, that was a soul's experience. They signed up for it. Yes, but there were others where free will was involved, and they shouldn't have done that.
James, how much does grief play into all this?
Grief plays a lot from both sides. I mean, people would say to me when I do these demonstrations of spirit communication, you know, I've tried so hard to get through to my loved one. Why won't they come to me? Why won't they come to me? You know, I was married to my husband for 40 years. Why won't he come to me? And I say to them, well, you're trying too hard. You're in so much grief that you're actually blocking your husband from coming through. He can't get through when you have walls of grief. So that does play a part. And in that grief, of course, is the guilt and so forth, the regret.
Do you have help from the spirit world in terms of individual spirits, or is this direct to the dearly departed?
Great question, George. It's both in that when I work, I have a team of guides, if you will. I have a doctor who works with me. I have a Catholic nun who works with me. I have an American Indian who works with me. I have an Egyptian man who actually works with me. And I have several other guides. And, you know, guides change also depending on the type of work you're doing and so forth. I get the information from the guides help to bring through the individual spirit who wants to contact the person in the audience. So that person in spirit must work with my guides, and the guides will say to them, you need to project the image stronger to James, you need to get on this vibration of level to send this to James so he can hear you in his head. So they work with that spirit and teach them really how to communicate, because for them, it's probably brand new. They never had this experience before.
Were these guides sensitive from the get-go, or did they need to learn this as well?
The guides, which I've attracted to me when I first started doing my work, they've been with me ever since I started, but there are definitely guides that change along with my evolution. They change. This doctor who works with me was also very much a medium when he was alive on the earth. And it just depends. It just depends on what you do in your life. You will attract that teacher to you who will really influence you to use your innate gifts the best you can. Whether it's an artist or an accountant, it doesn't matter. You will attract that.
You have touched a lot of lives with what you do in your life and in your career. Is there an event that truly touched you to the point where almost overcome with emotion?
Oh, George, every time I work, I'm overcome with emotion. Every single time. I would say some of them. I mean, there's so many different readings. I just did this one in Atlantic City this past weekend, which was so emotional because this gentleman came through for this. I think he must have been a 75-year-old man in the audience. And it was his brother that came through.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling. Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid. But as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.